Introduce our main speaker for this evening, Lauren B. from San Diego.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
It is really great to be here, and I really have had a great meeting up until this point. And thank you very much for your 10 minutes. It was wonderful to hear you, and it was great to get together with some friends before the meeting tonight for dinner. It's wonderful. Thank you for organizing it. And Mark, thank you. Where's Mark? Thank you very much for asking, inviting us down. And welcome to the new people. Happy birthday, Jesse. Jesse, happy 3 years. Yes, brother. Happy birthday. Being like the main, it's actually your birthday party. When it's just one member on the list, it's your birthday party. And that pulled out for a month, you know? And yeah, welcome to the new people and anyone visiting here. And I admire your literature table and your literature announcement. And so if something is not said tonight or shared tonight that you identify with, I would really encourage you to grab some of that literature in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where the solution's at. And hopefully what my plan is, what I've asked God to help me do, is to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. As was read earlier, that's just what it suggests I do in Chapter 5. And so it's really an honor and privilege. I really love being sober. I really love being sober. And as a byproduct of that, I love Alcoholics Anonymous because that's how I did it. In and of myself, Lauren does not get Lauren sober or keep Lauren sober or keep Lauren sane or happy or in line or any of that stuff. Left to my own devices, I am a rule breaker by nature. I am naturally rebellious. Give me one specific direction. I will 100% of the time, you can ask John, he'll verify this, find something to change. It's very difficult for me to follow the rules. And so what I have here is a little bit of guidebook for living that I didn't even really want. I have a home group, I have a sponsor, and a sobriety date. My sobriety date is November 28th, 2005, and I got sober on accident. I didn't come to AA to stop drinking. I came here to say that it wasn't going to work and that I didn't fit in with this kind. You know, I mean, I'm not referring to us here. I mean, we're all highbrow here, but the other AAers, you know, that kind. I went there to say that I wasn't going to fit in at all. And let's see here. I'm the middle of three girls. My mom and dad had three daughters. My dad was a colonel in the Marine Corps Reserves. And we were all wanted children, you know, like we were tried for. But he always wanted a son, and that's always been the big joke, is that they didn't find out the sex of any of the babies until the babies showed up. And then my mom was a little sad. They always brought a sailor suit to the hospital, you know, that kind of stuff. And it is a little sad, but it's like a joke now. But it's a sweet joke because my dad was the best girl dad ever. He was such a good dad. And but yeah, he's a colonel. He's in the Marine Corps Reserve. Busy. He's very, very busy. And we moved a lot. And so I got that skill down young. I'm a big, you know, packer up and mover. I can, you know, evaporate and be gone like that. It's a great skill. It's an excellent drinking skill. excellent drinking skill. And, you know, it's funny, like, nowadays it's a little bit weird. Everyone's, like, sick, you know, for a long time. If I was still drinking, do you have any idea how I would be milking the current news environment? Like, I'm not even kidding you. You wouldn't see me for 4 weeks minimum. I would have a lot of reasons. You know, we're talking like, oh, I have a fever. I mean, I would have a fever every single day. You know, like, I could make that stuff up on the fly all the time. I was so good at that. And now the news is vouching for me. You know, so it's like, oh, well, in that case, stay home. You know, and I'd be like, it would be just walls in. You know, I'd be drinking like Monica, basically. You know, all the time. But anyways, I was born in North Carolina, and you know, we moved to San Diego when my dad went into the reserves, and so I started school here. I was in the first grade here. You know, I feel like I'm from San Diego, even though I wasn't actually born here. You know, yeah, it was. You know, they say if love was enough, I wouldn't be alcoholic. That's not the case. You know, come from a lot of love, but not a lot of function, and I was a kind of a natural little sneaker from the beginning. I didn't like following the rules, and so I would spend the entire day forging a doctor's note just to not go to school, stone cold sober. You know, that's the thing about sobriety, is that I think that drinking, removing drinking, is going to make me whole and make me better and right, but I'm just left with my thinking, because I wasn't drinking when I was like 14, 15 years old. I wasn't hit the bottle every day. You know, I was, that's just me living my life, taking the bull by the horns, you know, and so I'd like to forge documents that came to bite me later on. But yeah, I just self-reliance, you know, that's what I wanted to do. It was hard for me at certain points to find identification in the big book, you know, cause Bill was this like amazing drinker, you know, I just felt like it was so great Gatsby, you know, I never had that stage of my drinking, you know, I was just sneaky and sly and shady and two-faced and, you know, smile to your face, run around on your back, you know, just all kinds of stuff. But I did like to go to the bars in Tijuana. When I was 16 years old, I had my sister's expired military ID, said that she was 18 and I was 16 and I could just turn that corner, no problem. It's a different environment down there now. The border's a little bit different these days. I feel sorry for people that can't drink down there and have a good time, because I had a lovely time. And we would walk across the border. In fact, I walked across the border. I was coming back from we went and got like tacos with my family and we went down to Mexico. It was great. Came back and, I walked across the border for something, and I remember coming across, and I was like, oh my God, that's the same bathroom, and I was like, oh, like total flashbacks from, God, I was like 39 when I was doing that, and I was 16 then, and I remember, I cannot believe I safely got away with all of that, because I didn't just do it once, I didn't just do it twice, it was like 3 or 4 times a month, you know, and I would go to school the next morning on any random Friday, and you know, big platform shoes were really in style then, and I'd have like X's on my feet still because the dirt was around where the shoe wasn't. And I was just like, it's cool, you know, and I would just like kind of play it off a little bit, but also it was kind of cool, you know, I was in Tijuana last night, you know, it's like, what? You're like 16, go to school. But it wasn't problematic. None of that was alcoholic. I thought it was just having a good time. So, I moved to Santa Barbara when I was 17 years old. I graduated high school. I had some internal problems. What that looked like is I had a lot going on up here and nothing for it to come out of my mouth. No way of telling you about it. No way of talking about it, telling you how I was feeling, nothing. My older sister had gone in and out of rehab now. Now it's called Sharp Mesa Vista, but back then it was a Kaiser facility. And so it was funny. I think I really don't know. It's a little blurry, but I would take tokens at like Alateen or some other like family, maybe an Al-Anon program. And I put them on my backpack, like my junior or senior year, because I was like trying to support my sister getting sober. It's just, you know, I don't know what the hell is going on in my life. I got to tell you, like we were three whirling dervishes of children. And my parents did the best to strap on and circle around and try and just keep everything, like, together. My father was armed constantly. It was just very intense. And I essentially escaped. I escaped. I was out. And I moved to Santa Barbara, where I had freedom. And I had sold them on this plan. And because of that, I had that skill of selling you ideas. I sold the plan, and I was the good kid. And so they let me see the plan through. And they never in a million years bet that I would actually stay up there and do it. I really think they thought that I was going to be like coming home in 6 months or a year or something. But just like any good alcoholic, I set my mind to something, and I am going to see that through. And, you know, and there was also a lot of violence in my home. You know, my dad was gone quite a bit with his military work, and my mom, she's just a rager and a hoarder. And so it was not uncommon for fists to be thrown in our house. And sometimes I was really asking for it, and I was really drawing it out. And other times I was just really good at ducking. And earlier on, it's just a skill. You know, I just got this, like, I understood precisely what was described in the big book now as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Because that's the kind of emotional experience that I had. And let me assure you, I didn't come to AA with that knowledge. Like, I had to do a lot of big book work to understand exactly what was jumping off in my head. But over time, I see that now. I see that that's kind of what I was getting away from, and that's what it was like. And so Santa Barbara is the land of love. Like, it's just the best place to go drink. You know, if you haven't drank up there yet and if you're considering going out. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. don't do that. No, it's also, they arrest you a lot. I was very active in H&I in Santa Barbara County jails for a very long time. And let me tell you, there's a lot of repeat offenders. You see them all the time. You know, don't do it. But it's just a great place to drink. And it wasn't always consequences for me. And so if you're new here tonight and if you're like going, oh, I'm not as bad as, you know, Jesse, who was, you know, like, he sounded bad. You know, maybe that I didn't have my perception of alcoholism for me was just varied at different times. I could always clean it up. I could always get it back together again. I could always get another job. I could always retake the class or find a new relationship. I could always clean it up until I couldn't. And that's where the windows like closed for me. And so I stayed up there. I lived in Santa Barbara for 17 years. You know, so I was 17 when I moved there, and it was 2014 when I moved down here. And it was just chaos and insanity. I worked on relationships. I worked on drinking. I found my people. I found my like fellows. Alcoholics tend to congregate together. You know, we find each other. And I did that and had a couple of hostages, long-term romance. You know, they'd try to leave me and I, you know, just, you know, you can't leave. And then I would try to leave them and then you can't leave. And I thought that was normal. It's not normal. It's not how it's supposed to go. What does that have to do with drinking is, you know, I started developing that double life was in full force for me. And so they would see this other side of Lauren and it was like, who is that? You know, and I just couldn't explain it. I couldn't reason it. I was just as baffled as other people and it got progressively worse. That progression had led me to supposedly graduating from college in 2002. I was supposed to be walking the line by a certain date. Family had purchased airline tickets. Granny Wheeler was flying in from San Antonio, Texas, you know, and my grandma, my papa, my cousin and his girlfriend and my sister and my aunt and my uncle, my other sister and her husband and my sister's boyfriend at the time, they got hotel reservations and I am on academic probation. No, in fact, they're getting ready to kick me out. Okay. So that's not how that's supposed to go. And so my solution for that is I was just Y2K progression changing. It was all happening then. Internet wasn't what it was now. And I could forge those documents and get away with it. And so stone cold sober, and this is really important for me to say, is I made that decision. Just removing alcohol isn't going to fix that type of thinking. Okay. So what I did was I got my card ready. I used my friends. I used it as the template. I was drinking PBR when I finally finished that. And I remember just being like, well done, Lauren, you know. And so it was a lot of work. And I walked the line, and the double life had sealed the deal. It had happened. I had arrived. You know, it had become that double life, and I drank on that for a couple of years. I don't know how nowadays. I'm sure that wouldn't be possible, or maybe it is. I don't know. Don't try it. It's a waste of time. But it's a lot of shame around that, and I never went back. I didn't go back until I made amends in 2013. 2012, actually. I was 7 years sober when I went and made that amends, and I didn't finish until 2014. And in 2014, they actually mailed me my real diploma, and it came in the mail, and it's all confusing because my whole family is like, what happened in 2002? But I went, and I just don't ever want to forget to say that part of it because sometimes I forget. And the reality is that it is possible. It is something that you can go back and do later on. I had to have a lot of experience under my belt and staying sober before I took on the financial responsibility of doing that and the amends responsibility of doing that and the actual execution of having a job full time while taking 2 days off a week to go to university classes during the day schedule. So I didn't know how to do any of those things, those life tools. I couldn't get in front of that until I had quite a bit of time of sobriety under my belt, and I couldn't get some of those, that thinking in place until I had some service commitments under my belt. You know, it's a Lincoln log, you know, you just build it one step at a time. That's not what got me sober, actually. It's not like I bottomed out on that. That was just a blip on the radar of my problems. I was one of those drinkers who would I'd go out and I'd leave my drink on the bar, you know, and I'd be like, let's see what happens, you know. I don't know if men might not understand that so much, but a lot of women, you keep your eye on your drink. It's responsible drinking. You don't leave your drink at the bar and just, you know, because someone's going to roofie you or slip something. I was not that kind of person. I was like, you don't have to roofie me. I'll buy it from you. You know, we can make an arrangement here. It's just one of those things that I thought was just a fun little thing to do. So I'd leave my drink out, and sometimes it'd be a smooth night. Sometimes it wouldn't. And that's kind of my experience with what alcoholism progression looks like for me, is that I can always get drunk. I'm going to get different types of drunk. I'm going to get blackout right away on one beer drunk. Why am I having one beer and a blackout? Well, I drank so much the last 3 days leading up to this, and I'm kind of in a gray brownout situation anyway, so one beer, yeah, bye. Or there's going to be, I could drink two bottles of wine. I could drink two bottles of wine and be snapping in my head, like I could do arithmetic. I could drive a car. I could, you know, open up an Excel spreadsheet, start doing some formulas, you know, but I'm going to get kicked out of that bar for being fall down drunk. I don't know why my head wouldn't stop sometimes. Sometimes I'd get so drunk that I'd want to plan a vacation with my new best friend or open up a business with that new friend or talk about, my, you know, maybe we're going to get some transactions going. Then I could be so drunk that I'm going to start bawling to a stranger. Or, oh, God, it's great. One time there was like a mutual friend visiting from out of town. I happened to be drunk at a bar, and they'd be over there having their vacation in Santa Barbara, and I'm like, they need to hear about how my life is going, you know, and just bawled with this mutual stranger. And it's like, oh, God, those are the kind of memories that, you know, I had to find myself in Bill's story. I had to find those experiences in the text, and it's there. It's always there. I had this one relationship that was really fantastic because he drank like I drank. And it was a while before I remembered this. And I remembered that one time we chartered an airplane in a trade to come to San Diego for a weekend. And I did not think that Bill and Evie, when they chartered a plane to complete a JAG, that that would ever resonate with this girl. But that's one of the stories in there. And I remember, it didn't even hit me until like 2 years ago. I was like, oh my God, we landed at Carlsbad Airport. Oh my God. Like, and it just came, you know, it's all in the rearview mirror. Ideally, you know, the longer I stay sober, the more the puzzle pieces fit together on some of those things. But no, what ended up being the final experience for me, it wasn't that I'd had one of those experiences one more time where I was a chronic drunk driver. And I would almost 5 or 6 days a week, I would drive home from somewhere in a blackout. And I would drink at work sometimes. Not all the time, but I worked at a job where it was socially acceptable that if I were to have a glass of wine with clients, that would be fine. I don't know about you, but I can easily turn one glass into a bottle, and people don't really tell. I mean, I got curly hair, you know, I'm friendly. You know, people wouldn't take that and wouldn't expect that of me. But no, that's how I did my life. And I remember driving home from work one time. I was sober on my way to a drink, and I was so agitated that I almost hit someone in the crosswalk. He's a guy pushing a baby stroller. And I was waiting for somebody to back out. And I thought they were waiting for somebody to back out. And I was just like, I'm not waiting for this. And I'm going around. And they were letting a person cross the street, you know. That's just sober Lauren living life unabridged. Raw, you know, kind of just like life on life's terms. Not okay, right? A lot of seconds and inches experiences. A lot of that opportunities where I can see where the sobriety is a gift. A lot about the way I drank was Russian roulette. I never technically had that going on, but almost every day with the way I live my life was complete self-reliance and just taking chances, you know? So I ended up, I was feeling suicidal one day. And what that looks like is I wanted to die and have it look like an accident because I wanted the glory and glamour of a lovely death. This is so terrible for me to say it out loud, but that's what I thought that if I, you know, oh, poor Lauren. Poor Lauren, she had a real rough go of it, you know, and I didn't, but that's just the way, you know, the perception went off in my head. So, and I would want it to be some unique rare illness or some terrible car accident where it wasn't my fault or something, and I'm playing around with those ideas, and the person that I was drinking with and living with, he was like, I'm sick of watching you drink to kill yourself. I didn't think that was noticeable. I was really disappointed. And you know what he did? And I maybe you have somebody in your life that had this conversation with you. It's a rough day when someone tells you all of your secrets about you to your face as an outside observer. And that's a very difficult day. And I had the blessing of someone telling me that and then saying, if you don't stop what you're doing, I'm out of here. You know, this person had never been to Al-Anon. It's not like they had the tools that they're ready. But I had cut myself off from my family, and so they weren't really hearing from me a lot. And I could only call them when I was a few beers deep, and I wasn't going out and visiting them. When I did, it would be Christmas morning. I'm there for 2 days. I'm really important. I got to fly back to wherever it is I'm at. You know, I'm more likely to book a trip to Australia than I am to go visit my family, which is also something that is I did. You know, it's like I'm not going to spend 2 weeks with you, but I'm going to go. It's better over here. You know, I think that might have been 2 months, to be honest. I think I was gone for 2 months. I did that multiple times. So the way it turned out was that, you know, I got that information about myself. And I was a little disappointed someone could see that about me. Thought I was keeping it hidden pretty well. And I had this pathetic prayer. You know, I had my shirt off. I was staring at myself in the mirror, and I could trace every blue vein from the center of my chest out. I felt see-through. I felt completely dead. I felt nothing. Flatline. I always drank to get right, get even upstairs. I never knew the anxiety that I experienced on Tuesday was a result of drinking Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm sober on Tuesday. Why am I anxious? Ugh. You know, like it just, and I was terrible. It was terrible anxiety, crippling anxiety. I couldn't leave the house without having a drink at some point because it would be so bad just to go to the grocery store. But there are other days it wasn't that bad. So it was just like, what's going on with me? What is going on with me? And I wish there was more of a glamorous way of what happened, but that this is essentially how it went, is that I confided in a friend of mine who was sober in another 12-step program in Northern California, because I didn't want anybody in Santa Barbara to know what was really going on with me. And so she said, you know, I've been watching you and listening to you for the last couple of years, and I've been sober, and you've never noticed that about me, but I've noticed how much you could need this. And she goes, you should go to AA. And you can probably find a meeting tonight, and it's free. She said a lot of really important things. I heard the it's free bit. I don't know why. Because I didn't have money for rehab. I thought I needed to have money to go to rehab, is what I thought. I thought that if I didn't have money to go to rehab, how am I going to get sober? I didn't have those kind of resources, and the words weren't coming out. I didn't have the resources or the tools to talk about it. And that brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to get real small in that situation. See, I wasn't driving myself to that meeting. My higher power was driving me to that meeting. And how I broke it down was I had to find a parking spot. I was so afraid to go inside. I was like, okay, I'm just going to find a parking spot. And I had to find a parking spot. Okay, I'm just going to go find the building. I'm going to go find the building where it's at. And I found the building, and I was just like, kind of got worse and worse. I was like, oh, God, I found it. Oh, God. And then it's like, I'm going to look for the door, to walk through the door. Okay, there's the door. Okay, I'm going to walk in there. And now I'm going to sit in a chair. And I sat in the chair, and I was just like, it's come to this. You know, it's come to this. What is wrong with me? And I remember just people went around the room. It was a closed meeting. And I said that my name was Lauren, and I don't know what I am. And they suggested that I stay. And I cried quite a bit. And kind of a spectacle, to be honest. And some people know this about me. See, I didn't know any. AA is a very weird place. Tonight, we knew exactly how Jesse was going to take his cake. He walked up here, the cake came out, he blew out the candles. Well, picture little Lauren, who had just turned 26 the day before. Like, I'm 26. You know, I'm the new person trying to take a cake. My birthday, guys. You know, I had no idea. AA is a weird place. So if you're new here tonight, you try to take cake for whatever, it's cool. Come, be, sit all the way down. I did everything embarrassing and wrong you could possibly do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stayed sober in spite of myself. But I did things like get a big book. I got a big book at that first meeting. I got pamphlets. I never read a single one of those pamphlets. Everybody gave me pamphlets, but take the pamphlet always. And you know, it was in the pamphlet was a meeting. They call them meeting guides. I think they call them meeting schedules. I don't know what you call it, but it's where the meetings are listed. It's also on the AA website. There's a lot of places to find information about meetings and maps and things that were vital to my early days of recovery. Because all I was going to do, that friend told me to just do it for that one day. So November 28th, I did that for that one day. And to this day, I still do it just for this one day. That's it. I'm not guaranteed more, offered more, promised more, or less. All I'm offered is this, just this one day. And this is all I do. And she told me to do it for that one day, and I did that. I did that for that one day, and I haven't done anything else different since that one day. I haven't drank since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't go through a treatment center. I came to meetings. I got involved in the big book. I got involved in the service opportunities here. I got involved in this new language that I was hearing discussed, this phenomenon of craving language, this tricky, smoky, spiritual axiom, like whatever it is you all are offering. I started buying every single thing. Because I saw myself. I heard myself. I saw, you know what a woman said? She started talking about how she wet the bed, and she started laughing. And I was sitting, sinking lower and lower in my seat, because I would do all kinds of tricks to conceal that had happened, you know? And that just happened a little bit. I had bought a rubber mattress cover for my bed. I had to cover that. Otherwise it got obvious to push it out in the sunlight, let it dry outside, you know, and everyone knows what that means. I mean, at least I do, and you guys do, it sounds like, but tricky. So women were talking about things that I would rather die before I confess to anybody, and that rang true with me. That hit something with me. I thought the problem was always him. I thought the problem was always the situation. I thought the problem was always the money. I thought the problem was always whatever experiences I had. Yeah, I thought that was the issue. So, no, I never knew that it was my drinking. I never knew that it was that Lauren given unabridged, like Lauren in control, Lauren in the driver's seat, that was my problem. And the only reason why I drank was because I was just couldn't handle all the self-reliance. Self-reliance, the book says self-reliance has failed me, you know, but not just that, is that my self-reliance made my problems worse. Lauren's solutions were always worse than the problem itself. And I mean, the idea of like, why didn't I just go retake the classes? Why did I have to go forge the paperwork and put on this lie? And okay, you know, and then my job thinks I've graduated. And so my job's got me doing stuff thinking that I have qualifications that I don't have. And then I'm over here with other financial debt that how about I double that? Because why not just take a trip? You know, like, let's not deal with this. Go. So I had a lot on the tip of my pencil when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got involved. I got a sponsor. The first lady I asked to sponsor her, she kind of blew me off. I thought that the requirement for having a sponsor was that they had to be old in age. And so this gal was probably 80 when I asked her, and she's probably 95 now. So I asked her around Christmas time to sponsor me, and she's like, yeah, let's try. But it, you know, I didn't know how to use a sponsor. I didn't know what it was doing. And so at my women's meeting that I was going to, where I had gotten a commitment, I think they told me to greet. I really don't remember. It's all kind of fuzzy, but I just did the footwork and the action. And they had me greet outside and talk to people. I don't know, maybe I did something else. And this gal, she said that she's like, I see you showing up every week and I'm really glad you're here. And she's like, who's your sponsor? And I was like, I think it's this person and I don't know. But I really admired that girl because she had a lot of self-confidence. She would drive in that meeting. She'd park her car. Her car had four doors on it, four tires, registration, insurance. Like, I was like, look at this. What? You know, like, I didn't know. I mean, when it rained, my car filled up with water on the inside. Maybe you've had one of those cars. I don't know. But it was like a fishbowl. You know, you just drive up the hill. The water goes in the back. Drive down the hill. The water rushes forward. It's like a little wave. And it was just a mess. How do you fix that stuff? I don't know. Go have a drink. Right. So I didn't have that sponsor. And so she's like, well, I don't want to see you flounder and fail here. And I was like, will you sponsor me? Will you sponsor me? And she's like, technically, no, I'm too busy. But you're willing. You're doing all the actions. You're coming to meetings. You're doing this stuff. So, yeah, call me. Let's talk. And I called her every day. I called her every day because she told me to. I didn't know that I couldn't not do it and that I wouldn't die. But, no, I did everything she told me to do. She asked me to read certain parts of the book. I read certain parts of the book. She asked me to read certain prayers and practice those prayers. I practiced them and I read them. You know, it was so like monkey see, monkey do, but it helped me. It was effective. It started programming my brain in a different way that I couldn't understand. And not just programming, but I started having Lauren stop doing. Lauren doing is probably the worst thing that was going on. The more I tried to fix things or have a problem be repaired that I wanted to take on, the absolute worst it got, even in sobriety. I caused some serious wreckage, like, right before I got sober and right around that sobriety time. You know, I didn't file taxes. I'm burning bridges. I'm calling up people saying, you're out of my life. You know, like, what? And that's just me trying to find my way here. I did everything wrong as you could possibly do and still, but the program does work. It, regardless of how poorly I apply the tools, if I continue to consistently apply them, and they talk about spiritual seeking, perfect and enlarge my spiritual life, anything's fixable. There's a remedy for any wreckage that I caused. Any wreckage. I know it sounds like the hill's too much, and how is somebody greeting at a meeting is going to have any effect on me filing my taxes? It is the absolute best way that I could eventually file my taxes was to have a service commitment at a meeting. I'm not kidding. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't my experience and it wasn't true. But I needed to stop doing. I took everything my sponsor said to heart, and I dove into Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt relief, but I never had a spiritual experience where I was struck sober. I never had a spiritual experience where all of a sudden I felt the grace of higher power in my life. I had what the big book calls in the appendices, number two, it talks about the spiritual experience of the educational variety. And that means it happens slowly over a period of time. And my big book teachers always taught me that that part also says with a sponsor, because later on it says about friends of the newcomer or aware of it before they are. Well, who's that? It's the person who's taken me through the steps, right? And so the person who took me through the step could see that's like, yeah, Lauren, God's working in your life. You got to trust it. And I'm over here being like, how? I got fired at 9 months sober for just being me, you know? Let's be honest. It's kind of like, you know, it's just a bit much. No, I was pretty twitchy. I was pretty twitchy for a while at work, and they just lay off of one. What does that look like? It's a legal firing. And you know what? Good for them, because I needed to get out of there. I'd worked at that job for years and years, and I drank at that job for a long time. And I did my best to make amends, but they were just looking to protect themselves, and rightly so. They needed protection from somebody like me, rightly so. And I got another job. I had ideas, and my sponsor's like, settle down, Lauren, settle down. Like, you need to just go to your meeting tonight. And the next time she's like, okay, Lauren, settle down even further. You need to just get another job. And it doesn't have to be your preferred career. You just need to get a paycheck because your rent is due. And I was like, but I can read The Alchemist, and I can go on trips, and maybe I can go back to college right now. And she looked at 9 months sober Lauren and was like, do you really think you're in a position to go retake all of those classes that you failed? And I hadn't even actually really fully disclosed the forging bit to her yet. She didn't know about that yet. And she already knew. We know each other. We know each other. That language of the heart. At the meeting this morning, at the women's meeting this morning that I was at, the pages that we read out of the big book, we talked about the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring its way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Those are the main parts of the book that I could identify with, where I felt the most remorse and the most guilt for how I'd acted and how I treated others and society and myself. And, you know, that's what I was bringing to the table. And she was trying to get me to take small actions to give me a little bit of self-esteem, because all I could see was my warped life. And I needed some of that self-esteem. I needed some regular friends, too. You know, my sponsor, really, she was my buddy, but she wasn't really my friend in that way. And over time, like, I made really good female friendships, and I could talk about some of the things that I was going through with them in a different way. And it's necessary. And I think that might have been why I've been able to stay sober since that time, is that I've never stopped doing what I did in those first days. I never stopped going to, you know, 3 commitments a week. It's not hard, you know. And my friend, she used to say, Lauren, you have commitments, capital C, because they're a commitment that I can do while I'm doing something else. Like, so for example, if I'm collecting money at the meeting, then later on I'm going to make sure that I'm depositing that money. And all of a sudden, what am I able to do? Look at my taxes. You know, that's the spiritual axiom stuff that when I was trying to be like, how is this helping? It helps. It's what works. You know, if I practice these principles in this program, you know, and I practice the traditions as well. A lot has happened, you know, adventures before and after. Just getting sober doesn't mean, you know, it's like cutting off power to the ceiling fan. The blades of the fan still spin, and Lauren's still doing Lauren. I got married when I was 3 years sober. I had a wonderful relationship with that person. I dated him before I got sober, too. And I had a stepdaughter. You know, she was 8 when I first met her, and she was 13 when I married her dad. You know, and I was, you know, it was one of the greatest blessings of that relationship. Although that marriage did not work out. It was an AA. I thought everything worked out in AA. I thought, like, what? You get together, you're there forever. What are you doing? What? No. No, we must grow spiritually. Lauren needed to grow spiritually. All of that had to happen. I had not gone back and made that amends to UC Santa Barbara yet. And so my higher power was over here being like, yeah, Lauren, you can do that all you want, but until you fully finish your 9-step amends, you're going to have some relationship challenges. And so I rode that wave out. But the best part of that relationship is that I have a stepdaughter today. Oh my gosh, she's 23. Oh, she's just the freaking cutest thing ever. It's awesome. She and I are still very good friends. Even after the divorce was finalized, she and I stayed friends. I'll tell you that immense story. I was an alcoholic practicing when I first met her. And so when I left, it was an alcoholic goodbye. Bye. I don't say goodbye to people with feelings. It's like, no, I'm out. I can't talk about that stuff. And it really hurt her little 8 and 9-year-old heart. She was 9 and was like, what the heck? Lauren's not going to come around anymore. And so her dad was rightly cautious to keep me away from her until I was properly sober and proper amount of time under my belt to be able to make an amends in the living amends fashion. And then later on, when we knew the relationship wasn't going to work out, it's breaking my heart, man. We sat her down and tell her we're getting a divorce, and she's like, I thought you were going to tell me that you were going to have a baby. You know, and it was just like, oh, really? Like, I left her once, and I'm going to do it again, and I'm 5 years sober, I'm 7 years sober, and it's like, really, God, why is it like this? And because I thought that's what we were going to do, too. No, it didn't work that way. I didn't do what I did before, though. I didn't do that thing. I didn't do that thing with that goodbye. I had to show up consistently. So every single week for 2 years after that point, until I moved to San Diego, we met for coffee when she had late start for school. And she liked getting a coffee. I'd buy her a Starbucks. She'd go to school. And she's like, I went to Starbucks before school, you know. And that's kind of cool for a little whatever. It is what it is. But it was fun for us. It was fun for that she and I could keep that relationship up. And then even when she moved to Los Angeles and I moved to San Diego. And, you know, we're going to concerts together and stuff. And we're doing fun things. It's like she and I would go to ball games together. Like, we just meet in the middle and do fun things. And that's the kind of stuff that I didn't know how to show up for people in my life, but for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know until I watched you guys do it. Every single experience that I would share in meetings, I would hear that stuff and I would take it with me and I would be like, wow, I can apply it in this way, that spiritual axiom. I could see myself in you. And there's been so many other opportunities for growth and invitations for change. This is like a nice way of saying that sometimes it gets real hard. My dad died when I was 3 years sober out of nowhere. You know, I have that experience where we were very close. I had made amends, but I wanted a lot more from God than to have that relationship end. And it was a long time for me to get square with that grief and to get square with that process. But it caused me to grow spiritually. You know, that choice, God is either everything or he is nothing. What is my choice to be? And I thought I was clear on that choice, but I might not have been so much more clear on that choice. Because I felt challenged. I felt really challenged. And what that looks like today is that was 10 years ago. You know, it was 10 years ago that my dad died, 11 years this June. And now I get to be a really supportive daughter to a mom who's a widower, whose real problems aren't even showing up till now, you know? And gratefully, I have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to show me how do I show up for family and how do I show up for the people that I love the most. See, I can show up to meetings all the time and I can do my commitment. How am I going to act at home? How am I treating my coworkers? How am I treating my sisters? You know, siblings, you know, we can, you know. But turns out we can also be best of friends if I apply these principles in this program. My older sister got sober a little bit after me. My brother-in-law got sober a little bit after her. It's just always been an adventure there. And then in the realm of relationships, I had become what I thought was, like, fully surrendered. But it turns out I had some undone amends. And so some of the bridges that I burned right when I was getting sober and circling the drain, you know. So there was a gal, my dad called her daughter number two. She was one I was raised, you know, growing up and everything. And I had said and done some very cruel things. And I know more about it now, which makes me feel even worse about it. But that's not the point. The point is that I was my ego was reduced enough to realize that I was finally willing and able to owe that person the proper amends they deserved. And I was having problems in relationships. You know, I don't know if anybody else has had this experience, but different name, different face, same problem. I am the common denominator. Lauren is the problem. And my sponsor was very clear on the connection. He goes, it sounds like this undone amends is affecting this area over here. And so I finally went, it was a year ago, this last year, I went and finally made a face-to-face amends with somebody. Oh. She showed me some of the letters that she'd said from my dad. See, I didn't invite her to his funeral. She was not welcome at the funeral because I wasn't willing to open up that ego side of me to have somebody in the room that I owed an amends to that I hadn't done yet. And she had saved letters that he had written her. And she's like, oh, and I got to see my dad's handwriting. And that's the kind of stuff that I'm 14 years sober. I didn't think that I had undone amends like that. I couldn't see them until I was spiritually ready, fully. And when I was fully ready, I got relief before I even did it. And I knew right away even more, I cannot live and talk this program if I'm not going to go and do that kind of stuff. And so now we get together regularly, like once every month or two, a couple of months. I'm driving up to see her and some of our other mutual friends, and we're telling stories from back in the day. And I can be the same Lauren at work, the same Lauren in my AA meeting, and my same Lauren in my relationship at home. And not just that, it completely opened the floodgates for my partner ideal. You know, I'm really grateful to have a partner in my life today. We're getting married in October, and it is a really great thing. It's a really great blessing. No, I'm not trying to, I'm keeping it together, really, because it's an interesting thing to finally fully surrender something and then God completely fulfill the wishes. You know, that partner ideal is not a joke. It's described in the big book on pages 68 and 69 and through into 70. And it's one of those things that I will drink if I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff. And that causes me to grow spiritually. And it's fully surrendered into what God's will is. I have no control in that. The greater I recognize that I have no control in that area of my life because you have shown me that, the better I perform in those areas. It's just completely up to God. It's completely up to your higher power. and whatever you choose to describe your God as. And it's a life beyond my wildest dreams. I cannot tell you what it feels like to be the same Lauren in every area, because I kind of thought that I already was. But there's just more. There's just more. Much like my bottom can be deeper if I continue to keep digging, much like my spiritual serenity can be if I continue to keep working at it. It can be greater, and it can be more, and it can be more enriched. And so I do this deal fully, to the most simple form. I practice a meditation every single day. I text the girls that I sponsor and some of the women that I care about after I finish my meditation. They text me back when they finish theirs. I'm standing with an army of support. And below that is my relationship, my finances, and other things. What's most important is what I do for Alcoholics Anonymous. And the sponsor that I have today has been an excellent example of what that looks like. Regardless of my feeling, I take the action. I act my way into right thinking. And I have no control over it otherwise. You know? And I try to be that person. I took my mom to a rock concert last night. It was hilarious. You know? But I'm that person. If I'm going to go and do that fun stuff on my own, why not bring her along? She also asked me to take her in some passive-aggressive way. But I wanted to be there with her. I love her. If I can serve you, like, all I want to do is be a servant in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have no greater esteem. And then I can be right-sized, and that's where I'm free. As a byproduct of that, I stay sober, and that's most important. Thank you very much.